Welcome to Alaska Edition, a weekly public affairs program produced by Alaska Public Media in the studios of KAKM.
Hello and welcome to Alaska Edition. I'm your host, Zachariah Hughes, and today on the show we're talking about music in Alaska. What's in the news, what's happening across the state, and what's changing. To do that, I am joined by three Alaska newsmakers of very different stripes. The old bull rider himself, Steve Heimel, a public radio veteran and host of The Truck Stop on KNBA, is here to talk about how music has changed in the last few decades in Alaska. Thank you for being here, Steve. Tara Young is a videographer for the Alaska Dispatch News, and her very cool, very beautiful work is a combination of arts reporting and ethnographic documentary, touching on everything from folk punks hunting caribou to the internet celebrities of Yupik drumming. Thank you for coming in. And Zakiya McCummings works for the Anchorage Press, and in editing the events calendar, she's definitely got her ear to the ground on concerts and trends across South Central's bands and venues. She also reports on music and shares a byline on a big cover story this week, which is where I want to start. Z, what is the Alaska Blues Society?
So the Alaska Blues Society is a foundation that was created by this woman named Jenna Marie Bourgeois. She came up here in February. I was in Fairbanks for about a month, met some people, decided she wanted to make a Blues Society. Did, and then almost immediately started advertising for this giant festival that's supposed to go on across the state in three different cities. And our story kind of looks at kind of the rise and fall of her organization.
And why is that? Why is this anything of interest to the general public or to musicians?
I think mostly it's kind of a case of someone dreaming big and not really having the expertise and just kind of skipping important steps in creating something as big as this. Something as simple as having contracts nailed down in writing and talking with local musicians about what is even viable in Alaska. Is this festival even sustainable? Those type of things.
And why are musicians and promoters concerned about it? Because it seemed like there was a lot of criticism, pushback, a little bit of ire over some of the stuff that she had done. And why was that?
I think mostly people kind of felt like she was taking advantage of the kind of kindness and hope of Alaskans, especially Alaskans who really love music, and the blues community up here especially, which has kind of ebbed and flowed over time, promising things that she couldn't really follow through on and getting people excited, including artists from outside, and just kind of giving this reputation of kind of flakiness for Alaska.
Well, and Steve, I want to ask you about how the size and the health of the music scene in Anchorage and in Alaska compares now to when you first came here.
Well, because of so much turnover, everything tends to turn over. And I think we really lost something when we lost the Air Force Band. The Air Force, the people had retired out of that for years and years and contributed to a really healthy, amazing, really, jazz and blues scene here in town. And that just kind of diminished. So that was a big loss. But generally speaking, I think that back in the day when I got here in 1982, you had a couple of bluegrass festivals. And you could count on, because there was a boom going on, any metal act that came in, even a really over-the-hill metal act would draw huge. And you had a separate audience that would go to anything country. We had this place, the Yellow Rose was called, where country bands, I mean national country bands would come and play, you know, and that's all gone away now. But it seems to me that we have a little bit more cultural mass now than we did back then.
Well, and what about the number of venues and the amount of support for local acts?
Oh, way more venues. You know, it's odd because you kind of mourn the passing of the good things, you know, like the Air Force Band or the Underground. And then there was a point, I don't know if they're still going on, where they used to have these raves that were just amazing, you know. They were just blast. You know, it's the social media is it just makes these things a little bit more vibrant. And genres are kind of blending together now, and there's all sorts of pickup bands that are showing up, and people are. This is the Trapper Creek Festival flyer, and I recognize like two bands in the whole list. I have no idea who these people, but they thought up some great names for their bands.
And how has the sound changed since when you first got here? I mean, I didn't know that there had been a thriving metal scene in the 80s, I'll be honest with you. But yeah. I'm just curious where the emphasis seems to be to you now compared to then.
Oh, I think we're more folky. I'd like to say that we're getting a little bit more hip-hop, but I haven't seen it yet. But I think given the multicultural nature of this city and of this state, we really need to try and foster a more multicultural musical expression. I think there's a national potential for that. But, I don't see too much of it yet happening.
And Tara, I want to ask you about Athabaskan fiddle music, which has come up in your work a lot. But before we do that, I want to show a piece that you did, and so we can talk about that afterwards. So let's go to that.
This is the Athabaskan Fiddlers Association, Inc.'s annual fiddle festival, and this is our 31st year. I have been volunteering probably for most of the 31 years, and it's awesome. My grandparents, they used to listen to this music, you know, it's music that was brought to us.
My grandfather is from Nulato, Alaska. He played music, he played the mandolin and the fiddle. Those are popular instruments back in the early 1900s. And I learned that the trappers and miners would come down the Yukon River and teach the native people these dance steps and jigs and reels on the fiddle. And so my grandfather learned how to play by ear. So I watch my grandpa play and learn. So then today I'm happy to say I'm part of the Athabaskan Fiddlers. And I just feel like family here.
Our elders are pretty much, you know, they're clean and sober people. They don't drink or use drugs. And when I think the Fiddle Festival started, they decided that it's going to be no alcohol, no drugs.
I'd rather die young than to go alone.
When I was a young girl, going to the dances, and I always remember seeing alcohol and violence. And today, that's not part of our music. We're changing, we're becoming more healthy, and our children are learning from us.
So, Tara, how has this musical form that came from outside of the interior changed in Athabaskan culture?
Yeah, it's a really interesting history. When Hudson Bay set up in Fort Yukon in the 1840s, the trappers that worked for them brought their musical instruments and brought this music and dance, and Gwich'in Athabaskans embraced it, and it has become part of their culture. And, I mean, in the same way that Scottish Isle music made its way to Appalachia or American South, it made its way to rural Alaska. But I think most people aren't familiar with that history, and so it's surprising, but, I mean, it's similar to other, you know, other places. But for me, going to the Athabaskan Fiddle Festival for the first time in 2013, and seeing people jigging in mukluks just blew my mind. And
why?
Well, it's just so unexpected, and it's these cultures colliding, and it's such a weird juxtaposition to an outsider. And so I became kind of fascinated with the history, and I've done at least two pieces on the Koyakon Athabaskan Fiddle Festival, but there's been a split in the Athabaskan fiddle scene, and there's now two concurrent fiddle festivals. There's the Gwich'in, which is more Scottish Isle jigs and reels, and then the Koyakon, which is more country western and Hank Williams. So Hudson Bay was upriver, up the Yukon, and they brought the Scottish Isle music, and then downriver, they were more influenced by Hank Williams and country western music. So it's really interesting, you know, how different the, yeah.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. You know, I've been up in Fort Yukon and helping them out at their radio station, and the liveliest part of the week at the station is Sunday morning when they get in there and do the gospel live, do these old country gospel songs, you know. And they know country and western music to a degree that's absolutely amazing. Mm-hmm. And the style of the fiddling is also so interesting to me because you'll hear arcane touches that haven't been heard since the British Isles, you know, that have just, as will often happen in a colony, they're just preserved. They just, people get along with them. Mm-hmm. The other distinctive thing about Athabascan fiddling is it's definitely dance music, and they go until morning. They go long, and these tunes go long. And it's a sort of a trance quality, mm-hmm. I think, that even a sober event will really get you up in a spell after a while. Pretty soon you're dancing.
I want to come back to some of the stuff that you mentioned, but before we do, Zaki, I want to turn to you and just ask. There's a lot of music in Anchorage and the surrounding areas right now, but I wonder if it's still sort of dominated by folk and bluegrass.
I don't know. It's interesting to me. I think there's definitely still major influence just because that part of Alaskan music history is just so rich and kind of important here. But to me, I think, particularly in Anchorage, the scene is very much more experimental. People are kind of getting together and just seeing what they can come up with when they bring all their instruments together. This is an example from Fairbanks, but I think of the band Harm, where they've got a clarinet and a cello, and a guy playing on one of those little beat boards, and just and someone beatboxing, and it's a totally different kind of music than you would expect to come. Like, you wouldn't expect those instruments to come together.
And what accounts for that? Why do you think that is?
I think Alaskans just have a lot of time to create, especially in the wintertime. And I think too, there's just this really rich, like, environment for creating here. Just the aura of Alaska almost just, it facilitates that creativity.
Well, and Steve, I want to ask you why bluegrass and folk and country cast such a long shadow here, whether it's, you know, the people who kind of arrived or if it has something to do with, you know, it's a lot easier to carry an acoustic guitar than an amp and a drum kit up in your car if you're driving up the Alcan. But why are those forms so prominent?
It's all of the above. I mean, in the 60s, it was kind of a vernacular. And so that, you know, there's so many waves of people come in and out, and that's been a common feature throughout. Mm-hmm. I think it was really interesting. The early bluegrass festivals were hardly ever bluegrass. They were more folk than anything. But nowadays, they've kind of gone the other way around. They do all sorts of dance music, exotic stuff with exotic instruments, and even exotic dances. You know, all these Eastern European mazurkas and stuff are, you know, people do that and even know how to dance them. It's mm-hmm. amazing.
And Zaki, I want to ask you, I know that you are enmeshed in some of the rock and punk scenes here, and I know that because I've seen you at concerts. what subcultures and subgenres right now do you think are really ascending?
There's definitely a very big pop punk scene here. There's a big metal scene, a huge resurgence of lots of metal bands coming out and kind of not just reinventing like metal in Anchorage, but reinventing themselves. There is a huge scene for indie rock, whether it's dream rock or psychedelic rock or whatever you want to call it. But there's just there's this huge growth in different kinds of bands. And I think it's really interesting, too, that these scenes, even though they're separate, they're really all kind of meshed together just because of the isolation of Alaska. The scene is so small that I don't really think that the scene could survive if all these genres didn't come together and intermingle so often.
Mm-hmm. A question for either one of you. Tara, if you want to jump in too, feel free. But big producer of electronic music, Diplo, coming to Anchorage in the summer. Street's going to be shut down for a festival that can accommodate a couple thousand people. Is that novel, or how have national acts kind of engaged with Anchorage and Alaska in the past?
I think I have really good experience this just from working with these companies with the press, but I think now, after bringing up certain acts this year, like bringing up K-Flay or STRFKR.
Thank you. Modest Mouse will be here.
Yeah, and Modest Mouse will be here. I think Alaskan production companies are just starting to dream big and not thinking, oh, there's no way that person can come here, mm-hmm. because national acts do want to come here. I think that I wouldn't be surprised if some of these acts have taken a pay cut just to come here because they really want to be here. And I think after these acts come here regularly and people are going back and telling their friends, like, oh, you have to go to Alaska. You have to work with this company. It's such a good experience. That's kind of what's facilitating this growth in national acts.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with everything you're saying. It's, you know, Whistling Swan has struggled for so many years, but the fact of the matter is it wouldn't have succeeded at all if the musicians hadn't really had a good time up here and gone back and spread the word. Mm-hmm. So we're seeing that over and over again. I mean, people out of Nashville, people out of the Texas music scene are really wanting to find some way to get up here because they've heard from their friends that it's really great.
Tara, a lot of your work is focused on subcultures, and I'm just curious why you would want to do a video piece about punks at a pasta restaurant.
I guess it's just subcultures fascinate me. I'm always looking for compelling characters or interesting events going on. And last summer, I reached out to Alaska Punks United to see if anything was going on, and eventually I found out about Punk Monday, which is an all-ages show at Pasta Avanti in downtown Anchorage. And, you know, there's no all-ages venues in Anchorage, and so these kids were looking for a place to have shows and hang out. And for some reason, Pasta Avanti, they've been really supportive of the scene, and it's, you know, just very sweet. It's not just punk music. It's rock music. In the video, there's a doom metal band. There's a Moonicorn. There's a ton of different bands. But like you said, the genres come together because there's not enough doom metal bands here to have a night of their own.
And we'll circle back later to a discussion of doom metal later in the show on KAKM Channel 7. But Steve, I want to ask you about the status of indigenous music in Alaska. And, you know, one of my favorite music stories in the last year and a half has been watching Byron Nikolai, young singer and drummer from Tuksuk Bay, go from, you know, having Facebook videos and becoming sort of an internet celebrity to meeting the president and releasing an album. And I'm just curious if 20 or 30 years ago there was any equivalent to something like that.
Nope. Nowhere near. I think we're in new territory here, and I'm absolutely thrilled. I'm glad to see it, you know. I'm so glad that Bamio has hung on for so many years. You know, everybody's got to have a day job and everything, but that's frequently the music scene in Alaska. And out in the bush, it's getting tougher and tougher. More and more people are moving to Anchorage. And you take your Athabascan Fiddlers, I mean, half of them are in Anchorage now. We're going to see this more of a mix, I think, in the town.
Mm-hmm. Tara, I want to ask you, is there a difference between the Athabascan Fiddle Festivals and a celebration like Chamai out for the YK region? I mean, do those have similar roles in the community, or are they fundamentally doing a different kind of cultural work?
I feel like they're very similar. Chamai seems like it's a lot larger, and it's for the Yupik culture, and it's more of a dance festival, but there's dancing and drumming, and it's honoring their culture, and it's a celebration, and the Athabascan Fiddle Fest serves that role as well, but maybe a little smaller, and it's just for Athabascans. Although there are some other cultures that contribute to the Koyukon one, but especially the Gwich'in, it's really just the Gwich'in Athabascans that mm-hmm. Participate. But Chamai, I was so thrilled that I got to go last year. It was really inspiring, and the costumes and the dancing and the ritual and the drumming is just very inspiring, and people are so excited to be there. And it's, and you know, it's different from something like AFN because it's all music, it's all dance. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Steve, did you have something that?
No, but I think that the younger generation is coming into traditional Native dance, and they're going to add new elements to it over time. And mm-hmm. we're getting what they call a young elders who want to pass on the tradition. They, in a sense, have more interest in tradition than their parents did. And so I think we're going to, it's just going to keep flourishing more and more all over the state.
Mm-hmm. Why does sobriety feature so prominently as a theme in your work, Tara?
Yeah, that wasn't something that was intended, but has just come up naturally, you know, when I'm doing pieces. When I did the Athabascan Fiddle Fest the first time, or a piece on Samuel Johns, the Native rapper, I didn't know sobriety was, you know, part of his message to youth, but he's really all about positive rapping, and so it was unexpected, but it just seems to be, you know, an issue that's, you know, we're dealing with in Alaska, and so it comes up again and again mm-hmm. with musicians, and
And see, for a question for you, but what are the barriers that exist for a lot of younger musicians in Anchorage and in Alaska, whether that's getting stage time and performing, or you know, having to work a day job for years and years and years, or needing to leave the state to grow? I mean, what are some of the challenges that you see?
Easily, there's no all-ages scene here. You can't...
I, too, blame high schoolers for a lot of things.
But the a local music scene cannot grow and cannot fully flourish without an all-ages scene, because those kids aren't going to start playing music, aren't going to start going to Mammoth and picking up basses and guitars and drums if they don't have something to look up to. ACW was doing all-ages shows for a while. Anchorage Community Works. Yep. I think they're still doing some, but really right now it's just kind of Pasta Vonti doing the Punk Monday shows. Tara was talking about how it's not really just punk music, it's all different kinds of music, and I think that's a really good thing because it's exposing these kids to all different kinds of music, and I think that's going to help hopefully facilitate some younger bands coming out into the scene. And I think it's nice for them, too, to be able to mingle with the older musicians.
Tara, a theme from your work, and Steve, you talked about this as well, is sort of that tension between traditional forms of music and a push to keep it, you know, close to its roots versus a lot of young people, but not exclusively, but adapting music to kind of more modern ends. And I'm just curious to hear from either one of you, which is right?
Which is right. Well, there's no right. But, you know, these traditions are evolving. They're living traditions. So, you know, whether it's the Athabascan scene or someone like Byron Nikolai, I mean, here's a kid who, you know, is doing traditional drumming, but then also making these videos where he's doing, like, little comedy acts or doing pop music in a traditional style. And it's a way to reach youth that might not know about their culture and about their traditional music. So, I mean, I think evolving is natural and, you know, just makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's actually reviving tradition as well as bringing new stuff in. And I think we're only going to see more energy going that way. I think you have to have the permission of the audience or else there's no point. And we're seeing the audience be more willing to welcome the younger generation now by far than they used to be when things were very, very stylized and confined to the style. And that's not the case anymore. The audience is different, and the audience wants to be excited and hear new things and so forth. And I'm talking all the audiences, even the Chamay audience.
Before we run out of time, I want to ask each of you for one or two musical acts or musicians that you're especially excited about in Alaska right now. And it seems fitting since, Zakiya, you literally came to the studio from the airport where you were at a music release party to start with you.
Oh, man. I am really excited for local metal band, Old Hounds. They are releasing their first album, finally.
You and me both.
I'm really, really excited for that, to see what they do. And there's this new local band. They've only played a couple of shows. They're called Brooks, and it's instrumental. They don't have a singer right now, but it's really fun, lively, kind of heavy music, and it's really entertaining to listen to.
And Tara?
Oh, so many bands. I am excited about the doom metal band that I saw at Punk Monday, and I'm not sure.
I told you
name.
We would circle back to doom metal.
I think they're Vatai or
Valtio.
Yeah. I think they're great, and I'm a big fan of Samuel John's rap music. I think he's doing really inspiring work.
And Mr. Heimel, the question to you.
Well, first off, I have to mention Bamyo, because I've watched them from the very beginning. And then there's Todd Grebe and Cold Country, the remnants of Barefoot Bluegrass.
I have to leave you there. That is all the time we have here today on Alaska Edition. Thank you to all three of my guests for being here. Zakiya McCummings with Anchorage Press, Terry Young with the Alaska Dispatch News, and the elder statesman of Alaska Radio, Mr. Steve Heimel. Alaska Edition is taking a break this summer, but after some camping, fishing, and festivals, we hope to see you on the other side. Thank you for joining us. I'm Zachariah Hughes.
Or write us at 3877 University Drive, Anchorage, Alaska, 99508. Alaska Edition is a production of KAKM. The opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily represent those of KSKA, KAKM, the licensee, or their underwriters.